this is a nice quiet place, I think, that we can do. Oh, damn it. Now there's a train coming. I swear, you know, it's like, what do they call that, Murphy's Law or something? It's bad luck when you think you found the perfect place and everything conspires against you.
These things happen at train stations, and so, you know, we expected the little, the occasional sound. I didn't expect the church bell.
Nah, that was inappropriate. That voice you just heard chime in, is that a bicycle Mark from Amsterdam? But he's not in Amsterdam, he's in Berlin right now. This is going to be a real pain, isn't it? I guess it's customary to chime a bell before you say anything in this country.
Yeah, I remember everybody knows the French SNCF, well, anyone who's been there, the doom, 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 it's like a four-tone thing.
Uh-huh.
Here, one tone is good enough, I guess.
Well, in the time that, here's another train. I guess we should have expected this standing at a train station. It's just that it looks so quiet and peaceful, I thought maybe there wouldn't be a lot of activity. But and there's only four tracks, but I don't know.
It is the day after New Year's, so people are still not awake, really.
It's true. I just woke up myself. Somehow I missed all of yesterday. This is, I guess, as good a way as any to wake up. But as you were saying, Bicycle Mark, you're here in... is it okay if I call you Bicycle Mark like that? You don't? Okay. It's just, a lot of people might not... I like being addressed that way. If you're ahead of me in the street, do I call out, hey, Bicycle Mark? Is that...
Some people do. I'm used to it, so yeah, Bicycle Mark.
Or BM. Oh, I guess they're probably not good.
Too. They do that,
yeah, that's
too.
Not a good initial. They don't
initial. Think of that in Europe, so it's good.
All right. While the chimes and whistles and trains surround us, let me point out, Bicycle Mark is here. You came all the way to Berlin just to set up a podcast that you're doing with me.
Here's
an ICE train. This is a really nice-looking train. I wish I could show it to you on the radio, but it's a super express train, very sleek-looking, and it's not stopping here because this station's too small for it. And it must be about 20 cars at least. It's actually two trains linked together. I think this one was just one, though. And it's, I guess, the equivalent of the Acela train that we have, yeah.
Well,
may you laugh.
If the Acela was at all accessible to mortals, yes. I actually came here, I was in New Jersey visiting my family because I grew up in New Jersey, visiting my family for Christmas, and I took a lot of trains. I went to D.C., I went to Philly, and I chose to take the Amtrak service. Of course, I couldn't take the Acela because, like I said, Acela is not for regular humans. It's for some kind of special person that... money must fall on them from the heavens. So I took the regular people's Amtrak, and I enjoyed it in as much as you can enjoy the regular.
Is that New Jersey Transit?
No, that's even more regular people's Amtrak. I wanted to kind of. I feel like when I take Amtrak, I'm donating to a charity that might be, even if it's a failing charity. I take it. But anyway, you were saying that I came here for the interview with you would be a bonus. But no, I came here for the 24C3, as did you.
Oh, you came here for that. Okay, I thought you just attended that as a prelude to doing the interview.
No, I'm afraid not. But I knew I would see you since we saw each other at the CCC over the summer. So that was an added bonus. Plus, I saw you last week, actually, in New York.
That's right, you came to New York. We could have done this there. It would have been a lot less noisy.
Yeah, we wouldn't hear as many announcements, at least not in Penn Station. I don't hear, you know.
Oh, there's always announcements in Penn Station.
You can't, trains.
I don't know what they're for. I can't understand what they're saying either, but they just don't have little chimes, and not nearly as many trains.
The only announcement I remember from Penn Station that sticks out in my head and that keeps getting repeated is the your bags and suspicious people, or is it suspicious bags?
Well, they're big into suspicion over there in the States. It's nice to say over there in the States, because I guess right now I'm over here in the States. But, yeah, interesting how that works. But anyway, here it's a lot less, that suspicion going around. People tend to... I was walking around Hauptbahnhof, which is the main train station. This is a little tiny Penn Station. It's a little tiny train station, yes, that's what I'm trying to say, that we're standing in now, although there's a lot of activity. Berlin has quite a few big train stations. Hauptbahnhof, Ostbahnhof, Zoological Garden, Friedrichstrasse... you name it. There's just so many of them. And a lot of trains stop there that don't stop here.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool thing that you can catch a regular train, at least if you live in Germany, to other cities from relatively local train stops slash metro stops, because behind us is also the metro on the same sort of platform.
They call it the S-Bahn, and actually the S-Bahn takes up two tracks on the other platform, and then two tracks here are for regional and intercity trains and international trains as well, and they just kind of zip by, or sometimes they stop here. But other stations have like 16 tracks, and there's all kinds of activity. In fact, I was in Hauptbahnhof, which is the newest station. They built the station after reunification, and it opened a couple of years ago. And it's really nice, attractive. You walked around it?
Yeah, I have, and that's where all the sort of new buildings of government are. I always notice when we're on the train that other Germans will point out the window and go, "Hey, there's Angela's house." They always say that when you pass, or somebody always makes a joke about the government anyway, because they placed a station in this area that has essentially a lot of open space and a lot of what was nothing, and now slowly they're building things for parliament, offices for representatives, and the Swiss embassy or consulate has a big building next to the prime minister.
Inside Hauptbahnhof?
No, just outside, across the way, and by the way, I mean a big open space they don't really know what they're going to do with, but they may actually leave.
There's another train on that same track that the express just went through, and this one's going to stop, it looks like. It's a double-decker red train.
Yeah, it goes to the airport, apparently, Schönefeld.
Not the airport that I'm going to, unfortunately. I have to take a bus to that one.
Which airport do you use? Because Berlin has these little tiny airports that have really cool-looking...
It's the one that begins with a T.
Tegel.
Tegel. Yeah, I have to take a bus there. I took a train yesterday because I was trying to kill time, and I took what is known as the loop train. It basically goes around a huge circle around Berlin, and we passed a little airport there, which I understand they want to close, in addition to the one that I'm flying out of.
Yeah, Tempelhof. It's like a circle. I look on the map a lot for that one because I've never taken it, but the Tegel, the one that you take, both these airports look like... airports from the beginning of aviation, you know, when little tiny landing strips, odd little shapes, and I don't know, it reminds me of something you'd experience in the 70s, or maybe even earlier, when you want to get on a plane. And apparently, in the olden days of making war and being at war, or preparing for war, these were also used by, I guess, the military? I don't know. But, yeah, they're small.
Military does take an interest in airports, I've noticed, so it's most likely. But I was actually in that airport. I've probably told this story already live on the air, but I'm sorry if I already told it, but this is before I go live, so I'm telling it before then. So, yeah. Anyway, I'm going to tell it no matter what. Maybe I should tell it on your podcast as well. That way I don't have to tell it another time.
I'm going to have to call you later.
You can't do that? Well, the whole point of this broadcast is to show you a podcast. There's no broadcast without a podcast.
Oh, that's a good point.
You think I just want to stand here in the train station and talk while trains go by and bells go off?
For some reason, I decided we weren't going to simultaneously record audio. Now I'll go back.
Oh, you decided that?
Yeah.
I see.
Independently. I didn't consult you on that.
No. It's supposed to be a joint venture here. You know, they broadcast a football game over two networks in the States because it was like a big deal, simulcast at the same time. We can do this.
Well, for the record, then, I've now turned on the recorder. Unfortunately, you already described where we are in Alexanderplatz in Berlin.
Right, but you can describe it now for your listeners.
Well, for my listeners, it would be basically the same. I would say, hello, this is Bicycle Mark. I'm in Berlin. I'm in the Alexanderplatz S-Bahn slash...
Oh, wait, I noticed you said you would say it, as if you're not really saying it.
That's a good point.
Yeah. So, what, are you going to substitute that with something else?
I'm going to keep going from here and cut my, you know, losses. So I'm,
okay, fair
I
enough.
I will, in the present, say I'm standing here with Emmanuel of 2600, and we've just finished, only a day ago, the 24C3 conference here in Berlin, which is only a...
Damn that bell. Can you cuss on your show, by the way?
You can.
Yes. I can't. This microphone has to be clean.
Okay, I'll
but if I want to say a bad word about that bell, if I hear it one more time, I can say it into your mic.
Yeah, and then you have to edit your own audio. But you have, I'm sure, a routine for how to handle that.
Yeah, I use it a lot.
But the beauty of podcasting, besides being nice and imperfect, is that you can curse. Although you can be imperfect.
I can be, but you know, I don't think cursing really adds to anything. I think what I describe is worthy enough of a curse, so you don't really actually need to say the word. But isn't it nice how quiet it is now?
Yeah.
This is nice.
Yeah, and this is really January 2nd type quietness, so
mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
Not a sound to be heard.
By the way, Emmanuel, what number, I mean, I know it was the 24th for the CCC, Congress that they've had. For you, how many have you attended?
I think after 4 or 5, you lose track, but it's probably about 4 or 5, maybe 6.
Yeah, and I guess this was by far the largest, according to the stats, right?
I'm not sure if by far the largest. I think last year might have even been a little bit bigger, but it's around 4,000 people, which I think is large enough. You know, you fit more than 4,000 people in that building, and, well, you don't fit more than 4,000 people in that building.
No, and last year I remember being horrified by little things like the bathroom because of the amount of people. This year they did a really good job.
Well, yeah, I warn you, there's another ICE train coming in the other direction. It's going to go zooming right by us in a couple of seconds.
Okay.
That's not it that you hear now. That's actually a subway train across the platform. The ICE is bearing down on us.
And some listeners may be thinking, why did you choose such a place to do a recording? And we chose it on purpose. I hate to give away our secret, but we wanted the sounds of trains.
Yeah, I guess that's a secret. We're getting the sounds of a lot more than that. We're getting announcements and people walking by and various other things.
So, in terms of the Congress, anything that sparked your interest beyond the normal large amounts of creative people getting together?
Well, your talk was certainly good. You were talking about the polar ice cap, the Arctic one, that's melting, and how it's leading to all sorts of differences in the way governments treat shipping passages and borders and disputes and a new Cold War. I thought that was interesting. I'd like to know how you got involved in that.
Yeah, how did I get involved in that? I spend a lot of time, thankfully I don't have a regular job, so I spend a lot of time searching for what I would call underreported news. So I deep click into articles, and sometimes I'll see like one line, I think this happens to you as well, I'll be reading an article about a related topic, so it'll be related to climate change, and there'll be one line towards the end about the Arctic and a conflict. But it'll be a very vague reference, because as we know, a lot of mainstream media, they don't really have time, money, or the will to go into details of issues these days. And I'll take that one line, that one reference, and I'll search it even further. So I think it was basically that. I was reading about global warming, some article related, and I came across the... Well, of course, there was the flag planting of Russia. That's what sparked my interest. And thankfully...
Russia planted a flag where?
The Russians took a submarine over the summer and planted a flag underneath the Arctic, on the ocean floor.
How do you plant a flag underwater?
I saw the video. It takes a robotic arm. You need a robotic arm, and it's a... I forget the material, but it doesn't rust. Is that titanium?
Well, what happens if a fish makes off with it or something?
I don't know. And, you know, I hope when you plant a flag that you would leave some kind of a camera to prove that it's still there. But I guess that would be asking a lot.
Big mistake we made when we went to the moon.
Right. Wait.
We have no idea that flag is still there.
Yeah.
We have to start the space program up again and go back to the moon to make sure nobody's messed with it.
Yeah. I don't know what the plan was, but beyond planting the flag, it was a sort of sign to say that this Arctic will be ours, is ours, because they're trying to prove to the United Nations and basically the rest of the world that it is technically, if you go underwater, that ridge where they planted the flag is connected to Russia, even though it's very, 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 very far away from Russia.
Well, yeah, it is, but not only Russia, but I think also Denmark and Canada and was it Guatemala? There's another country, wasn't there? It wasn't Guatemala? No, it was.
It's Canada and the United States.
Bhutan. Oh, I thought you said the United States wasn't involved in this one.
Well, the United States is involved to the point that they want to keep the Arctic and especially that section over Canada. They want to keep it international so that they can pass without paying dues, especially if it becomes... You have to imagine like a Panama Canal type situation. I say that because if Canada controls it, then they could set up a little booth. I think I joked about that. You know, you have a little booth with a Canadian, and when you pass with your large ship, you pay them a fee. And I guess you pay that fee because they clean up the ice, whatever's left.
So what I don't get, this is the part I didn't immediately understand. Panama obviously controls the Panama Canal. Now, why would not Canada control this canal, this Northwest Passage, if you will, that leads from one part of the Earth to the other?
Canada wouldn't control it because even if, let's say we all believe in the law of the sea, even that's the United Nations Treaty on how much of the ocean countries control beyond their regular border, the land border, which is 200 nautical miles. This is a sort of standard, even though the United States has never ratified this treaty, I think they respect it symbolically, normally.
But not enough to ratify it.
Right, they don't have to always respect it. But so far, well, never mind if they respect it or not. They haven't.
I love how we obey international law just when it suits us.
Yeah, and
if only I could live my life that way.
So, but the problem with the Arctic is that it's beyond. Much of it is beyond
Nothing to worry about, just another train.
Okay. I turned around like it was coming towards me.
If it hops the platform, I'll let you know.
It's beyond the national limit, the international limit, come to think of it. So much of the Arctic is in what's called international territory or United Nations administered territory. And a long time ago, it was no problem, or at least up until the 70s in my research, they say nobody was interested in owning it. It was just cold and everybody agreed it was for science. They've actually said the same thing about the Antarctic, which I always thought was a good thing. It was an idea that this place was dedicated to research and nature, or the few amounts of people, because there are people, who live in those places in the world. But Canada claims that even beyond international law limits, the Arctic is mostly, much of it is theirs. The United States claims that a small chunk of it is theirs because of that area over Alaska, because Alaska does become within the, I guess, Arctic Circle.
All right, Fairbanks, I believe.
Yeah, and so the United States is involved because they want to keep it international. They don't want to pay money, obviously, and they definitely want to be able to, if they can grab a little bit more above Alaska, they want to grab a little bit more. And beyond that, eventually they do want to, and they're going to get it soon, it seems, drill under the national, what's it called, Arctic Wildlife Refuge, ANWR, who I think was the president of Egypt.
ANWR Sadat, yeah.
They want to drill under him.
Is that what it's named after?
No.
I didn't think so.
Arctic National Wildlife AR.
And he's probably not named after that.
I don't know.
It's fascinating talking about world events like this, but this just goes to show. I mean, I mentioned one talk that I saw at CCC, which was your talk, and you see how much discussion that evokes. Imagine over 100 talks and people like us standing in train stations talking about them right now.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, there was a lot of good talks at the CCC. I, of course, am not as good with the technical stuff, and they, of course, are. So I look forward to the alternatives.
Nobody is as good at the technical stuff as they are. I mean it. There's some kind of superhumans here that are able to just make a conference in a building happen with perfect AV and perfect music and everything set up on time. I'm always in awe of them, and they've served as a tremendous inspiration to the Hope Conferences, as well as many other parts of my life.
Now, a lot of my listeners don't know about the Hope Conference. We're going to, in the next few months, definitely be talking about it.
How is that possible? They don't know about the Hope Conference.
It's my own fault, really. I've been focusing on different parts of the world, somehow beyond the United States.
All right, well, as long as we're on the subject, Hope stands for Hackers on Planet Earth. It's a biannual conference. Takes place every couple of years, for those of you who don't know what biannual means. This one is our seventh one. It's the last one, the last Hope Conference. And it'll be taking place at the soon-to-be-demolished Hotel Pennsylvania, so we're led to believe. So it's very important that people show up and come to this conference. It'll be, I hope, similar to the CCC. We try to make it as international and varied as possible. And we try to have a really fun time in the middle of New York City, where everybody tells us it's impossible. You can't afford to go to a place like that. You can't be in the middle of a major city like Manhattan. But we do it. We've done it many times. People come there for the first time, and they're just amazed at what a friendly place it is and how much fun you can have 4 a.m. in the middle of Midtown or in the middle of the afternoon. It's just a great experience.
I see my low battery thing is blinking. I don't know if that's ever happened.
My goodness.
And plus, I have about 10 minutes to get where I have to go. So
you want to get on the train?
Uncharacteristic of me. No, I have to get on an S-Bahn. Although I don't know what would happen if I got on a train. But anyway, uncharacteristic of me, I'm going to cut this short on my side. But Emmanuel, the website, hope.net, right?
What about it?
Oh, okay. Well, that's the website where people...
Is it down again?
Well, not.
Damn it. Every time I go away from town, something happens.
Let me press stop before I...
Hope.net. Okay, I'll check into that right away.
And it's been fun hanging out with you here, by the way. And
it's been a blast.
Next time I'm in New York, I'll definitely come around. Or we'll meet here again. You never know.
All right.
So from Berlin and Alexanderplatz... Oh, there goes another announcement. This is Bicycle Mark and Emmanuel Goldstein, and we'll see you soon.
Okay. I don't know if you want me to mention, but your microphone was disconnected that whole time. Was that something I should have said?
We'll
bring that up later. But isn't it interesting how they blow whistles here for the train? That's the only... It's weird. Europe is a very whistle-oriented society. You blow a whistle in a soccer game. You blow a whistle when a train is about to leave. Anybody can blow a whistle. I don't know if they figured this out yet, but anybody can blow a whistle and make things happen.
You know what's interesting? Yes, that is interesting. But I noticed that the new Dutch trains, as I live in the Netherlands, I'm going back now, the new Dutch trains actually design their doors. I think it's done with air compression. When you, I guess as a conductor, you press the button to close the door, the closing of the door makes the air is released, and it makes a whistling sound. So it sounds like somebody's blowing a kind of a weird whistle, and then the door's closed. So they've actually kind of replaced the whistleblower with a whistle made of, you know, well, wind.
They've replaced the person with air.
Yeah, which is cool.
Well, now, Bicycle Mark, you're going to Friedrichstrasse now. We're at Alexanderplatz.
Yeah. Do you want to go with me?
I was with I was with a big fat American the other day. Not one of my friends. I was on a train. And, you know, I never did tell my Ausbahnhof story.
Okay.
But basically, and I was going to tell that on your podcast. I'm really sorry. I was on a train, and this huge American got on with a bunch of his friends, and they were just talking so loudly. And at one point, he had this southern accent, which I'm not going to try and imitate, but basically said, "You know, I've been in this town 4 days. I finally figured out that Platz means plaza."
Yeah. I think a lot of Americans know this, and it's not urban myth that, indeed, we speak louder somehow than the average nation. And people forget that. They think it's not true. I think that's odd. I always think about that stuff. Or I hope I always think about that stuff.
We speak louder because other people tend to speak different languages, and they don't understand us.
Yeah. Yeah, that's another thing. I really got to learn German.
Well, you've learned Dutch.
I've learned Dutch, and, you know, I have the advantage of having grown up in Newark, and a lot of people know the Ironbound in Newark, which was a very Portuguese sort of isolated community where you could just speak Portuguese. So I have the advantage of having grown up speaking two languages, and then very soon thereafter learn more.
Can you do that today? Can you go to that part of Newark and just speak Portuguese and get by?
Yes, you can. And
I'll have to try that.
Globalization has taken it a sort of step further. I would call this the positive side. My bank in Newark was my bank in Portugal. So the grocery stores and the groceries that I could buy in Newark are the same that I buy in Portugal. The only thing that changes is that people do different variations, of course. You know, they like donuts. They like American things as well. And language has changed in Newark as well. There's American words that have become part of the Portuguese language.
I should point out that while we were talking, we walked down the steps to the lobby, and now we're walking back up the steps onto the other platform where we're going to get the S-Bahn. But you have to buy a ticket first.
I think I just might cheat the system and hop on for one stop because it's already here.
All right. Well, I already have my weekly ticket, so let's hope this isn't the one time
that I'm breaking the law and
we get checked.
I like the challenge.
Well, of course, I'll simply witness the arrest or whatever happens.
I wouldn't mind you recording it.
But we're on the S-Bahn now. It's one stop, you say?
It may be two.
So anyway, to this story that I was trying to tell. So I was looking at the tracks. They're basically laid out on two separate floors. The whole place is like four stories high, but at the very bottom is I think tracks 1 through 8. And on the top are tracks 10 through 16.
Uh-huh. Go on. I have not seen it.
It's really nice, and there are all kinds of trains coming from all over the place. One is north-south, one is east-west. Well, what I just said, where's track 9 and 10?
Where?
Well, I must have spent an hour and a half walking around that building looking for them.
Uh-huh.
And since it was New Year's Day, I had no place to stay because all the rooms were booked. I was kind of kill time, you know. I was just wandering around the city. I was hanging out with a friend for a while. Of course, I was at the New Year's party that you were at.
Yes. That's a whole other story.
Yeah, that's a whole other story. But basically, I was wandering around trying to figure this out because I really was kind of perplexed. How could you have two missing tracks? And, as it turns out, there apparently... First, I went upstairs and I walked all around and looked past, I think, track 11 to see if maybe there was space for a track 10. Didn't see anything there, so I went downstairs and went over to track 8 and saw what looked like a metal wall. I figured, you know, if there are going to be tracks, I guess they would be behind that metal wall. But why are there tracks behind that metal wall, and why are they hidden tracks? So, is this Friedrichstrasse?
No, it's an isolated.
Oh, boy. This is, yes, Hackeschermorf. It's spelled the way you think.
Yeah, it's a really nice area, too. It's one of the fun.
It is. I wondered why there might be hidden tracks there. And then I went upstairs and walked over the part where those tracks would be, and I saw little barriers and a sign for the U-Bahn, U-Bahn being the underground train network, the, like little subways, smaller than these trains. And they also go above ground, too, sometimes, and the S-Bahn goes underground, but never mind that. So I noticed a sign for U-55. Now, usually trains are U-1 through U-9, single digits, so this is U-55. And I'm like, oh, that's strange. I never even heard of U-55 before. And I realized that must be the missing tracks. And I went back, got on Wikipedia, looked it up, and sure enough, they have a whole big thing about the U-55 being an extension from Ostbahnhof to some other part of Berlin. It's just a shuttle, a couple of stops. And it's called U-55 because eventually it's going to link up with the U-5. But because the city is actually bankrupt, which you'd be surprised to run as a bankrupt city because it's so nice, so many things are working, because of that they had to sort of curtail that project for a little bit. But they'll finish it, and they'll finish it probably sooner than we ever finished the 2nd Avenue L, Second Avenue Subway in New York City. I don't think we're going to build the 2nd Avenue L again.
I got to say, I really like being in a... That's interesting, the story of the U-55. I like being in a city that's bankrupt. I hope more cities become bankrupt. It might be a good thing, because all the ones with money, like I believe Amsterdam has money, they continuously make bad decisions, and, well, I'd rather that they didn't have any money at all, so that they could just keep things working as they do here and slow down with the bad decisions.
Absolutely. Morally bankrupt, that's not a problem, but I mean, financially bankrupt would be a plus as well. As long as the money is used for something, I mean, reuniting Berlin costs a fortune. If you ever have to reunite a city, if New York and Newark ever get reunited, I'm sure that's going to happen as well. It's something that's expensive. I know that the Koreas are afraid of that, South Korea especially, of being reunited because they look to Germany and they figure they can't possibly afford it and it'll be on a much bigger scale there.
Interestingly enough, in the last, I think the election is done now. Or at least in the upcoming Korean election, we're here.
This is it, okay.
They are going to elect a conservative government that doesn't want reunification. That's one of their main platforms, because the current Korean...
Oh, got off the train while I was still moving.
The current Korean prime minister, of course, is in favor of some kind of steps towards reunification. And it's weird. I thought that a lot of Koreans would be glad, or at least up for the challenge, but... Apparently not. The candidate who says we're against reunification, we're not doing it, he's becoming the more popular, and he'll win the election. I think it's going on soon, a matter of days.
How about that? And, of course, this is the day before the Iowa caucus in
the
States.
Before.
Of course, when you're hearing this, it's going to be after, so you know something we don't know. But care to make any predictions that will later be proven wrong?
Yes, a handful of people will walk into a room and make a decision that affects, 260 million people now? And I predict that, once again, we'll be horrified at this reality. Beyond that, I'm not pulling for anything, but an Obama victory is of interest to me.
I think that's of interest, too, because that would shake up the system the most. Of course, who knows how long he would stay a viable candidate or how long he would even stay an interesting candidate. But last I heard, I listened to the news this morning, and he was ahead of Hillary by 7 points.
Ahead, you say? In a place like Iowa?
Yeah, well, you know, maybe they moved a whole lot of people into Iowa and just for that purpose. Well, here we are outside now, and look at that, it's a crane.
Wow.
Digging up this, not a crane, what do you call those things?
The word steam shovel comes to mind, but that's not what it's towered on.
Well, it's lifting up all the dirt, and it's about to dump it all into a dump truck, I guess, and it's, I can't believe I don't know what that's called. I used to have one when I was a kid.
Bulldozer? No.
Bulldozer's on the ground. This is up in the air.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Oh, it's now, I'm now 1 minute late.
See, that's the way things work here. If you're 1 minute late in Berlin, it's too late.
You know, the problem is I'm working with a Dutch person, so I don't know what will happen. He said 12 sharp, but we have to turn left. Oh, wow, look at that. There's a,
you can't describe that on the radio.
It's a Mardi Gras-style communist puppet. It has yellow stars, so I say communist. Cross. Very anarchistic. We're crossing not in any sort of zebra stripes or anything.
Well, that's one thing I noticed in Berlin, that people tend to wait for the red light to turn green before they cross.
They do. I mean, they are still German. They're the most rebellious of all Germans, I think. But they're still German.
I think in the States we obey laws much more fanatically than any German these days.
I think you're right. I mean, it's different because, I guess, now I'm speaking about Germans only because of a few years or... years and years of experience as a good friend to all Germans, or most Germans. They're more about organized, following rules that keep things organized. Whereas in the United States, most of the people I know are disorganized as hell, but it's more fear of getting in trouble.
Well, like, I think New Year's Eve is a good example of what you're saying, because what people do here, as in Amsterdam it seems, on New Year's Eve is just simply go crazy and light everything they can. Not light buildings or anything like that, but just get a whole lot of fireworks.
Yeah.
And just light them everywhere, set them off, make a complete mess of everything around them. For a day afterwards, broken bottles and fireworks remnants and trash. That's all being diligently cleaned up. We're walking now on the second, and the place is spotless, I'd say.
Yeah, they're working on it, yeah.
But for that one night, it's mayhem, complete mayhem. I was on an S-Bahn train yesterday that was simply disgusting. I can't even put it into words. But I'm sure that train now is, you could probably have lunch on the floor.
Yeah, it does take a little time, because we walked through Alexanderplatz before. It's January 2nd, and it was still a mess. But yeah, where we are, it's already been cleaned, and today's the big day for cleaning up, so...
And for waking up, like I did, and things like that.
But what you were saying about the fact that, you know, building on what I had said, that despite the fact that, you know, yeah, people were outside lighting fireworks at each other's apartments, I believe you had a direct hit on somebody's house.
All right, let's just clear this up right now. That was not intentional. What happened was, you saw me buy the bottle rocket. I went to this Chinese store, bought a couple of bottle rockets for fun purposes, like everyone else was having.
Yes.
And, in fact, did you light the first one? Someone else lit the first one.
I lit the first one, which went up into the sky.
All right. And mine should have gone up into the sky, too. I don't know why it didn't. I aimed up, which is what you do.
Yeah, you used the same bottle, even.
I even used the same bottle. And it worked out pretty well for the first couple of moments. And then, for some reason, it took a sharp turn, 90 degrees, and went straight into somebody's window on a balcony. And I just recall the horror of seeing it suddenly light up red, that whole area. I'm like, my God, this is what bombing a country must be like. The target acquired was a heat-sinking fireworks that I bought there. I'm really sorry, but the building didn't burn. I didn't hear any screams.
No, it didn't.
And people, for some reason, even though you're walking down the street and things are exploding around you, people are calm. I mean, kids are calm. Everyone's just sort of, yeah, that's the way it is. And I know Americans have a big problem with that. I have somewhat of a problem with it. But once you accept it and move on, it's kind of cool. And the other thing that impressed me so much about that day was I didn't see any cops. I saw no cops on the street. And yet I felt safe. In fact, I don't know what the statistics are, but I know there was a lot of violence in London. I'm sure there was violence in the States. I don't know if there was violence here at all, or arrests or anything like that.
I doubt there were any arrests, because no cops, no crime is what we used to say in New Jersey. Not that we didn't have cops, but we'd say that anyway. Yeah, I didn't see a single cop. I saw more cops during the Congress, where no crimes, well, are visibly committed. No crimes are committed. And I saw more cops then, during our demonstration, which was very peaceful and very laid back, than I did all of New Year's, and I walked around a reasonable amount on New Year's.
Our demonstration being the demonstration against the new German law?
It was a sort of an eclectic demonstration, which, if you want to get real strategic about it, might not be a good idea. But it was a demonstration, now people are going to be angry at me for saying that. It was a demonstration against data retention, yes, I guess a specific German law. Yes, actually, I know a specific German law. And then they included a bunch of other, like, you know, bundled up some issues, including, well, he's part of it, hating the interior minister and speaking out against his policies, which are very unreasonable. And was there anything else thrown in? I don't know. I saw a lot of different kinds of signs. That's why I say there were other things added.
While that was going on, there was just a line of police vans outside the building. And I guess we were just there to observe, to make sure nothing happened, but I didn't even see the cops get out. It was weird. There was a big van at the beginning and a smaller van, and there must have been about 7 vans, each one getting progressively smaller.
Yeah, you have a good photo of that, where it was just like those Matryoshka, what are they called, the Russian dolls, where one comes out of the other.
Yeah, it really was kind of bizarre. Well, you know, you're well past noon now, so is this person going to wait for you?
Well, what's going to happen here is he's going to wait. He's going to be on the verge of leaving me, and then he's going to be a little bit bitter in the beginning of the trip, but then he'll warm up to me and we'll chat, and he'll find out that I've lived in Amsterdam for a while, and so it might
be... Smart car just pulled up next to us. Isn't that something?
I wonder if that's not him. Let's go right.
Okay.
By the way, we're going to the Heart of Gold hostel. I don't know if that's familiar to anybody.
Well, it's funny because Heart of Gold is, of course, the name of the spaceship that the CCC has and planted in front of the building where the conference is being held.
I didn't even realize that.
That's why I said it was a big coincidence before.
Oh, I was wondering what Heart of Gold reminded you of. Oh, this person's also going to the Heart of Gold.
Yes, and I think he heard you say that now. I think we're following him.
No big deal. Everybody goes.
All right, well, I guess now's a good time to wrap this up. So I don't want to freak anybody out with a microphone.
Although some people will wonder if I got left or not.
I have to meet somebody at 1 o'clock. But, you know, it's so incredibly easy to get around the city because the way the transit system works, you buy a ticket and you keep it in your pocket. Of course, you have to cancel it to prove what time you started your journey. And I bought a week ticket. Not weak as in not strong, weak as in a ticket that lasts for a week. And with that, hey, another smart car. How about that? That means I can basically on any train, bus, tram, you name it, for a week.
Yeah.
And not have to do anything else. I have not been challenged once. And think about it. Every time you get on a train in the States, you're challenged. You must present proof.
Right.
To either a person or a machine.
Right.
And I don't want to get run over by this car. Here, it's assumed that you're honest and mature. Do we go too far?
No, there's taco meat.
Ah.
Yeah.
What does that mean? How long is now? Where is that place?
That's Takali's, which is the cool, all the way up where the blue neon lights are. This is an old, sort of abandoned-looking building, but it's quite occupied. I think it was a squat. I forget, you know, your Berlin people will be horrified at my description, but I think it's very symbolic of the sort of resettling of the East by rebels of all kinds.
I see there's bottles of champagne still on the ground. Looks like a firework display was launched here as well.
Yeah, and so it's now a famous sort of bar for still rebellious people, and it hasn't really been colonized by the commercial world yet.
You see that car over there parked? That's actually a Ford. It's called a Ka, K-A, and they have those here, but they don't have those in the States.
Huh.
It's kind of like a VW, but sort of more bow-legged or something. I think it's really cool. I don't know why all the cool things stay here. But anyway, like I was saying, so I'm going to leave you and get back on the train.
Yep.
When I do that, I'm just going to walk on the train and not
worry.
Look anybody in the eye. And just get on the train I need to go and go to wherever I need to be. And simple like that. You get around so easily in this place.
Yep. It is still the good days here in Berlin. Hopefully it lasts. Well, yeah.
We'll see. But I'll make sure you get to where you're going first.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. I don't want you to get stranded.
Yeah, I'm going to call him right now.
All right. I'm going to make sure this is actually recorded. From Berlin, it's Emmanuel speaking with Bicycle Mark, and I'm sure we'll have much more to say on the subject.
Thank you. Metropolitan Meets the Epoch.